Welcome to the Ether. Today is Friday, May 20th, 2022. Today on the Ether, the Cosmos Ladies chat with Quicksilver about decentralization, diversity, and more. Let's take a listen.
Right now it's 5:30.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a little bit later for you guys, right?
Yeah, we actually have chill of that. Almost everyone is in Dubai or in Europe, so that's pretty standard time for us.
Oh, I see. Well, that's pretty comfortable, I guess.
Yeah. Actually, we have shared the previous link, so people might be looking for that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess people are joining in.
Yeah. Well, in any case, it's really great to be here and to catch up with you guys. So, yeah, really looking forward to this.
Yeah, same here. I guess we should start.
Okay.
Then the people will join and all. So, okay. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Twitter Space. My name is Sonia, the co-founder of the Cosmos Ladies. I have Spoorthy along with me. So, yeah, and I'm super duper excited for this Twitter Space. Today, we are joined by Roya, the co-founder of the Quicksilver. And I'm excited to hear about her vision, ideas about the project, decentralization and diversity. So Roya, why don't you introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you so much, Sonia, for the intro, and thank you and Spoorthy as well for for having me and for everything that you guys are doing. So as you mentioned, I'm a co-founder of Quicksilver, which is a Cosmos SDK zone that will provide liquid staking for the entire Cosmos ecosystem. I'm also co-founder and COO of Ingenuity, which is the development company that is currently building Quicksilver. And as way of presenting myself, I have a background in traditional finance, and very early on in my career, I worked quite briefly in investment banking and portfolio management. That was really shortly lived for a lot of reasons, but primarily because of the overt sexism and bro culture, which ties up nicely to what we'll be discussing today, I guess. Then I started working as a strategy and management consultant, still focusing on finance. And that was really nice because it was really at the intersection of finance and operational excellence and, you know, just how to build and maintain a team or a business or a project, and how to deliver high quality products and services, and of course, how to do all of that while creating a good internal culture. So I did that for several years, and it's been extremely formative for me, as you can imagine. And obviously everything that I learned back then is extremely useful for me today while, you know, I'm the one doing the building. And yeah, so that's been really cool. And I guess before all of that, a long time ago, I went to business school where I studied a bunch of stuff, but focusing primarily on, well, finance and applying mathematics to the field of finance. I also briefly went to engineering school in parallel for a year, and that was a really cool time too. And I mostly studied risk management. So yeah, that's me.
That's pretty cool. By the way, as a co-founder, what has been the main values that you have been focused on while building your company?
Yeah, that's a cool question. Because we have been pouring a lot of thought into that, especially early on as we were, you know, iterating on Quicksilver and how we want, you know, what we want that to look like. And we ended up with, you know, three main values for Ingenuity as a development company. And really, we've been trying to inject those values into Quicksilver as a project and a product. And so these values are people first, curiosity, and integrity. So the way I see it, we're not just building a team or a product, we're really building a community. So first, we're building a community of people building Quicksilver. it's the project team members, of course, but it's also, you know, all the contributors, very broadly speaking. You know, for example, when we get our white paper reviewed, or when people interact with the posts we made on social media, or when Joe or Vish or myself go into a podcast or Twitter spaces and, you know, have the privilege of interacting with smart and passionate people that, you know, challenge us and provide us with valuable feedback. Like that's a sense of community that's very important to us. And the other aspect of it is that we're also building a community of users, right? Because like every design decision that we make for Quicksilver and how to bring it forward from the airdrop structure down to, you know, the user experience on our user interface. This is all built with the user in mind. That's really important to us. We're building something that, you know, we hope will serve the Cosmos community and be owned by the Cosmos community and steered by that community. So that's really what People First is about. And I'll touch briefly on our other two values, which are, you know, curiosity and integrity. And essentially, we really believe that these two principles are very powerful, you know, in driving innovation. Because, you know, basically being curious and questioning the way things are being done and being inquisitive about, you know, what goes on around us, that's really essential to, you know, create anything of value or anything that's really innovative, you know. And finally, you know, integrity is also really important, and it ties into, you know, seeing things for what they are and being truthful and being okay with getting it wrong sometimes, because, you know, like that can happen and that's perfectly okay as long as we own it and we try to do better the next time around. And that's necessary, you know, if you want to have the ability to, you know, change your perspective and your outlook on things. So really, you know, integrity, in my opinion, is, you know, that thing that pushes you to do better and to be better and to build something of quality and of value to everybody involved. So yeah, these are our three values that are sort of guiding us at the moment.
Well, actually, I can totally correlate the importance of building and developing communities in the Web3 space. And as a DevRel, I can totally correlate with the people first, curiosity and integrity. And I totally abide by them. Well, you talked about, you know, developing communities. So what's your pathway around that? How do you develop communities? How do you like interact with them?
Yeah, I think, you know, communities and developing communities is absolutely paramount, not just in Web3 and in work, you know, just generally speaking in life and even from an evolutionary perspective almost, like building and developing a community is what really gets you far and ahead. And in Web3, it's even more important since this is a fairly new field. And considering the topic today, you know, especially building a network and a community when you're a minority in a space or an industry is super important. And I know that, you know, fostering this community You know, for example, it's one of the reasons that we were able to, you know, for example, recruit relatively easily and build such a great and diverse team that are, you know, very value-driven individuals and that we love working with every day. And we were able to, you know, do that with very tight deadlines because we, you know, we started developing the project quite recently, and the expectations were high from the start. And yeah, so having that strong sense of community is what helped us in that area, for example. So yeah, like for example, I had met with Valeria a couple months before starting Quicksilver, and she really impressed me with, you know, like her passion and her work ethic. So the minute we started looking for someone to help us with marketing, I instantly reached out to her. And yeah, so I don't know what it is specifically that you want to touch on with regards to building communities, but you know, for example, recruitment is one area that stands out to me in that regard. That, you know, that we can delve a little bit deeper into it if you want, or we can discuss something else. You tell me.
Sure. And as we got to know, like, you handled the initial recruitments of the Quicksilver. So while doing that, did you face any kind of challenges to find the relevant talent?
I mean, yes and no. I do realize that we managed to hire quite seamlessly, especially in the beginning, and that was because we had this network and this web of people that we knew, and we were able to leverage that. So yeah, like on the recruitment side, there are a lot of great teams in the space that can help with that. There are also a lot of online communities, of talent pools like Women Hack and Women Who Code and such. And within the Cosmos ecosystem as well, like there is such a strong sense of community in this ecosystem, which is truly amazing. From my perspective, at least, it really looks like this is, a great ecosystem to be building a community within, because it looks like it's an overall kind and safe and respectful space to be in and to evolve in. I think I remember reading a comment in your Discord actually a few weeks ago or a few months ago, I can't remember. Someone mentioned that they were listening to various spaces where someone called the woman the B word, and the moderator, they didn't let that fly. So it may feel like the bar is literally on the floor sometimes of, what qualifies as decent behavior, but this is really a good indicator, of how bad it can be in some industries sometimes. But really, it was really such a great thing to see within Cosmos. And I guess, on that topic, what you guys are doing, in order to foster that sense of community and to create a safe space for women and for people generally speaking, like that's really important and very impactful in like moving the needle in the right direction. So yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, that's huge. And actually those guys are here, the Cosmos Space guys.
Oh,
so
hi.
A huge shout out to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Kudos.
Yeah, a huge shout out to them for fostering these communities and protecting us. Well, as a follow-up question, do you think that the space has grown enough that you can hire the experts directly? Or is it more of let's hire the smart people and figure it out together situation?
Yeah, it's really a good question, because sometimes it kind of feel like a chicken or egg situation with that one. I really think it's a little bit of both. So, the talent pool for tech companies and for Web3 companies is very big and way more diverse than we would think initially. But I'm also aware that that might just be my personal perspective, because it's something that I really care about and that I'm, you know, involved with such communities and groups, whether in real life or on social media. But the other thing is also that from my perspective, expertise is really something that can be acquired relatively easily if you're motivated and you know, hardworking enough. So when you consider Quicksilver, for example, like none of the people that we hired had any significant crypto or Cosmos experience, you know, apart from a very genuine interest in the space and a huge eagerness to learn more and to contribute to something this early stage and that could potentially be of impact and of meaning. And I think that from that perspective, from, you know, the perspective of diversity hiring, we also need to be intentional about that sort of things and accept that, you know, by bringing more people into the space that, you know, weren't really native to this industry, this also means that we will need to invest a significant amount of time and resources to help them ramp up. But in my opinion, it's always way easier to help someone understand, you know, blockchain technology than it is helping them become more ambitious or smart or hardworking. So, you know, like, for example, if you consider an engineer, like as long as someone is good on a technical level, has good reasoning skills, is collaborative and can work well with others and has a genuine interest in crypto and blockchain, not necessarily expertise, just, you know, a decent level of interest. Honestly, from my perspective, that's all I need, really. Like the rest can be acquired. So this is obviously like a choice that we made. Perhaps it's the right one, perhaps it's not. But I suppose, you know, there are pros and cons to both.
Yeah. So do you think like hiring people with less experience could make our products more vulnerable?
Make our products what? Sorry?
More vulnerable.
More vulnerable. I think not as much as hiring the same people over, like the, you know, the same people over and over again. Because with that come a lot of biases. And that's okay. You know, like we often give biases a very negative connotation, but I don't think that's necessary. You know, if you have a brain, you have a bias, and that's perfectly okay. However, if, you know, people that look the same, that think the same, that came from the same background, if these people are, you know, the same people that stay together and build together products, then, you know, these products will perhaps necessarily have some blind spots, right? And whereas, you know, with more diverse teams, then, you know, you have different perspectives, different approaches to problem solving. And there are, you know, just statistically speaking, there are less opportunities for, you know, the team to have blind spots. So when you consider that from a development perspective, it gets, you know, it gets even more important, because I think we can all remember like the artificial intelligence that, you know, kept mixing up black people's faces, right? So this sort of epic fails, you know, in the development of products can be avoided by bringing on more diverse teams. So yeah, as I said, you know, expertise can be built up over time. And of course, like someone that is just onboarding into the company and still ramping up to a lot of stuff, like they won't be expected to build anything from day one. Obviously, there's some time that they need to take in order to onboard and get more proficient. And of course, they will get the mentorship and the help from the other more experienced team members. It's really a collaborative effort. But in my opinion, like like the risk from a product perspective and a development perspective, the risk from, you know, teams that think the same and see the world in the same way and look the same and work in the same way, like that risk is way more impactful than you know people that need to ramp up for a couple months before being able to contribute to a project in an impactful way. But you know, again, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and as you talked about diversity, do you mind giving us some numbers about the Quicksilver? And also, as Quicksilver is growing continuously, how do you plan to scale the diversity?
Sure. Yeah, so right now we are a team of six people, and so far we are three men and three women. I do appreciate, and I am aware that a large part of it also ties to luck and chance and having been able to meet the right people in the right at the right time. And with regard to your other question about scaling with diversity in mind, so like, first of all, that's a great question. And that's a great consideration to have in mind. And actually, like, what's interesting about it is that it kind of ties into two things, right? So first, there's hiring a diverse team, okay? And then there's scaling up as a company. So this is funny, actually. Many years ago, I read this great book. It's called Brotopia. Maybe you've read it as well. In any case, like if you haven't, I really, really recommend it. It's a great read. And essentially, the writer, Emily Chang, which is like this senior journalist at Bloomberg, she essentially builds this very, very compelling essay about everything that kind of led up to where we are today in the tech industry and why it can be so toxic for women and other, you know, racial, religious, or sexual minorities. And one of the key learnings that I took with me from that book is that any diversity issue scales with the company. So everything having to do with diversity needs to be a priority for companies like very early on. Like we really can't afford to go, oh, let's just focus on the product for a couple of years, then, you know, we'll address the fact that our team is predominantly male and we can't retain any women, you know, and then address that later on. Unfortunately, it's not something that we can afford to do. Like, I mean, firstly, because, you know, the bigger you get, the harder it is going to be to solve that. Which, you know, makes total sense, because I don't know about you ladies, but I really don't want to be the only woman working in a team of 86 dudes, right? So that it makes total sense from that perspective. And also the other thing is that when you scale in such a way, you're like the company culture is also going to reflect that and be quite kind of unwelcoming to any, you know, different people that will be joining later on. So even if you do end up hiring minorities, you won't retain them for very long, and for good reason. So, you know, there are really kind of two sides to this. There's building a diverse team, and there's also understanding that when you do that, you also have a responsibility to kind of foster a place where they can work safely, where they can, you know, be safe both physically and emotionally, and to make their professional development and their career advancement a priority. And that other side is inclusivity. And from my perspective, like, one really cannot go without the other. Because if that's the case, like, we're just kind of taking marginalized people and tokenizing them, and you know, that's just even worse than not hiring them at all. And yeah, just by the way, I really appreciate that it's very easy to come on the Twitter spaces and talk about the theory, right? and I know that you know, doing all of this can require a big investment from companies, and I'm really not being in this attitude of, you know, giving out lessons or anything like that. This is really the last thing that I want to be doing, or like shame anybody that is not doing that. But, you know, all I'm saying is that we need to at least be intentional about this sort of things. And I really, really hope that at Quiksilver, we are being intentional. I mean, we are by no means perfect. And I hope that we withstand the test of time. But, you know, this is something that we are, you know, intentional about, and that is really important to us. That's all.
Thanks, Roya, you know, for coming to this Twitter space and being so much transparent about hiring, diversity and everything. Also, you know, now we talked about diversity. So beyond gender, what are the other factors that we should focus on while hiring the diverse people?
Yeah, it's really a tricky question. And there's also the fact that it's really weird, right? Because you do want to hire diverse people, but you also don't want to make it about diversity alone, because otherwise it's kind of insulting, right? And you know, I really think that we just, like, we need to be aware of certain barriers that are systemic, you know, and that are very high, and that kind of prevent some social and demographic groups from entering certain spaces. And you know, we're talking a lot about women today. I mean, at least up until now, because you know, that's what we are, and that's where our perspective comes from. But of course, like, diversity is very wide. Like, you have obviously religious diversity, racial diversity, you have sexual diversity, you also have I'm sorry, I don't have this term in English, but essentially you know, people that are in a situation of being physically disabled, or you know, having some sort of invisible challenges that come with some illnesses like anxiety and depression and bipolar disorder and that sort of things. Like, really, diversity is so huge. And there are also other factors that tie into that, like, you know, demographic factors, like, do you come from a working class family, or do you come from a background that is financially and culturally privileged, that allowed you to have access to some things that other people could not afford. That also ties into it. So, you know, the idea here is, and of course, there's only so much we can do as companies, because these issues, like, really need to be addressed at the root, you know, like, very early on, with you know, decent public school systems, where everybody can access high quality education without having to pay for you know, shit ton of money to you know, to access high quality education, or access you know, nice after school activities that are going to help them develop skills and such things. So, you know, like, this is a huge social problem that starts very early on in life, and, you know, that needs to be addressed at school, that needs to be addressed at universities. And yeah, so actually, like, the bad thing kind of about this is that as companies, we are kind of at the end of it, because you know it starts in schools, universities, etc. And we end up, you know, at the end of the road, trying to, you know, advance, you know, this to advance, you know, diverse people and diverse teams, but with, you know, a very kind of small pool to choose from, right? So in any case, like, I think I'm kind of rambling here, but I think that, you know, companies need to be aware of these systemic barriers and go the extra mile in sourcing these people. And there are a lot of recruiters that kind of specialize in that. There are a lot of you know, community groups and online recruitment groups that can help us do that as well. And we also need to have that in mind during the recruitment process as well, and understand during the recruitment process that, you know, if you are talking to a woman in the tech industry, or if you are talking to a gay man or something like that, chances are they have been, you know, treated very unfairly. Chances are they have heard, you know, slurs. They have been working with people that have been constantly, you know, questioning their credibility, questioning their professionalism and their ability to, you know, to perform their work and their leadership. And we also need to be, you know, mindful of that during the recruitment process. And we, most importantly, we also need to be aware of the biases that we bring with us. Because, you know, like, all of us, like, we all have biases. I know I do. And I know that I try very hard every day to deconstruct them. But we all do. We all bring our biases and all these social constructs to the interview table. And the idea here is, you know, like, the first step towards trying to do something about it is actually being aware of it and acknowledging it. And there's nothing wrong with that, really. But that really needs to be the first step. Yeah, like, these can be some things to think about and to explore with that.
Now I have a huge respect for the hiring managers.
Right?
Yeah, like, their job is so difficult.
It can be. And for sure there are some difficult decisions that they have to make sometimes. But I also think that, you know, hiring is a good exercise for the entire company. Like, I think that perhaps, you know, everyone within the company, to the limit of their ability, should be, you know, involved in the hiring process. Because, you know, one of the issues with the hiring process is that, and that's fairly normal, because people have a tendency to hire people that look and think like them, which is totally fine. I really think that it's the most natural thing to be doing, really. But if it's always like a few key people within an organization that do that, and most importantly, if those people look the same and think the same and come from the same background, then, you know, this misrepresentation will have, like, more chances of you know, to keep going, because they will keep hiring people that appeal to them, which is fine. However, if the people, you know, doing the hiring are, you know, very different and very diverse and have very, like, huge, you know, different outlooks on life and on business and on how to do things, then, you know, just statistically, chances are the people that, you know, will be hired more and more in the future will also, you know, be very diverse and look differently from one another.
Yeah, and yeah, thank you so much, like, for sharing your insights about diversity and hiring.
My
and
pleasure.
Kudos to Quicksilver, you know, for doing an amazing job. And
thank
now
you.
I'm really interested to know about Quicksilver product.
Sure.
So Roya, why don't you share like what's the vision for the future of Quicksilver and what do you expect in coming years?
Sure. So I guess, first of all, you know, maybe I can say a few words about Quicksilver, because I don't know how familiarized our audience is with the product today. So essentially, Quicksilver is a Cosmos SDK zone that will be providing liquid staking for the entire Cosmos ecosystem. And the way it works is that users will be issued a voucher. It's going to be called Q asset. So if it's an atom, it's a Q atom. If it's an Osmo, it's a Q Osmo, and so on and so forth. So users are going to be issued this Q asset, and essentially that Q asset represents their native staked asset, and the Q asset can then be used in DeFi. And the cool thing about Quicksilver is that it can basically scale to any IBC connected chain, and users participating in the protocol will be able to, you know, stake with any validator they choose, and they will also be able to retain their voting rights through what we are calling a governance by proxy model that we are currently working on. So essentially, that's really Quicksilver in a nutshell. And we're really excited to be building in the Cosmos, and we absolutely feel privileged, you know, to be part of this ecosystem and to hopefully be able to contribute to it in a positive way. Like that's really what drives us. And our vision is for Quicksilver to truly enable cosmonauts to be able to make the most of their staked assets, obviously without putting decentralization into any sort of risks and without putting network security into jeopardy. And obviously, you know, community discussions and governance participations are super important to us, as they are to the Cosmos ecosystem, as we always see, you know, over and over again. So we are really trying to build a product that will make that easier for users as well.
That's pretty cool. And can you specify some of the reasons why did you choose Cosmos for building the product?
Sure. So I guess first of all, you know, Cosmos represented a great market opportunity, because, you know, like the IBC ecosystem is a huge POS ecosystem, and it's been really growing in an insane way recently, and we really think that this is truly just the beginning. So there was this huge untapped potential, you know, both for builders, because that creates opportunities for them to innovate and to try to experiment and create really cool stuff. And it's obviously also a great opportunity and for users as well. And it will be full of potential for them as well. Now the other reason why we chose Cosmos had to do with staking in Cosmos. So, you know, the maximum amount that can be slashed in case of validator misbehavior in Cosmos is 5%, and that's the maximum. So what this means is that essentially the remaining 95% of staked capital is just sitting there. It's totally illiquid and it's not being used. So, you know, there was an opportunity there to create a product that will allow users to, you know, both secure the network, but also at the same time unlock the potential of that capital. So essentially, that was a huge, you know, unutilized capital, which is great from a liquid staking perspective. So there's also that. Now, finally, you know, the other main thing that draw us to Cosmos is IBC technology, which is really the stepping stone to Quicksilver as a product, in my opinion. Because the state of IBC technology in Cosmos today, with the interchain accounts and the liquidity staking module, for example, like that would allow for the creation of like a very scalable product, and a product that will be able to provide users with a user experience that's very smooth, and a product that's kind of, you know, free from the usual kind of constraints and burdens that are usually that usually come with liquid staking. So, you know, building Quicksilver on Cosmos really made sense to us for all these reasons, essentially.
That's cool. And yeah, IBC is the heart of Cosmos ecosystem.
Yeah.
So, And, you know, talking about, you know, Quicksilver, how have you focused on enhancing the decentralization?
Yeah. That's a great question. That's a question that I love. I always love this. So I think before going into decentralization, like more specifically, you have to consider that Quicksilver as a product has, you know, a few kind of key features that really make its value proposition and that really makes it into a great product, in my totally biased opinion, of course. So, you know, it's four features. The first one is scalability. So as I briefly mentioned before, Quicksilver will be able to scale very seamlessly to any IBC connected chain, right? And the second one has to do with validator choice. I think I briefly touched on that as well. So Quicksilver does not restrict validators. The product won't present any, you know, any whitelist of a few validators on the protocol that users can choose from, and essentially users can be, you know, can be able to stake with any validator that is that's present and active on the native chain. Then there's also the retention of governance rights, and that's one of my favorites, actually. There's the, you know, the retention of governance rights, and basically, thanks to this feature, users will be able to keep voting on the proposals that are going on the native chains, all while using Quicksilver. Because usually, when you liquid stake, you have to kind of forfeit your governance rights to the validator. And we are currently working on what we call a governance by proxy model that will essentially, you know, allow users to keep their voting powers, which is really, really important, especially, you know, in the context of an ecosystem such as Cosmos. And finally, like the kind of the last feature to keep in mind when thinking about Quicksilver is community. Because, you know, what we intend for Quicksilver is to really be in the hands of the community, and users will be able to vote to determine the future of the network. And you know, that includes, for example, all the zones that will be onboarded, for example. So when you consider kind of these four features, there's a bunch of them that help enhance decentralization, and that was really important to us, because you know, decentralization is really kind of the foundational principle of blockchain. And of crypto, so it was really important for us to build a product that won't put it at risk, and we are doing that through, you know, so first of all, as I mentioned, Quicksilver won't be using whitelisted validator sets, and what that means from a decentralization perspective is that users on the protocol since they can stake with any validator they choose, and they have no obligation to choose, you know, one out of 5 or 6 or 7 validators. That means that, you know, the assets, they will kind of remain evenly distributed on the native chains. Then we are also building this this kind of system that we're calling participation rewards. And unfortunately, I can't go into the specifics yet. But it will essentially be a way to, like, an additional way to incentivize users for them to stake with, you know, more decentralized and performance validators, and also validators that are active in the governance of the native chain. And also the other thing. Yeah, sorry, you wanted, Sonia?
No, please go ahead.
Okay.
Please go ahead.
All right. Thank you. What was I saying? Yes. Finally, kind of the last main thing that aims at enabling and enhancing decentralization is our airdrop structure. Now, again, I really can't go into the specifics because we're making like this conscious choice and decision not to release too much information about this, you know, to avoid the airdrop being gamed. But essentially, the airdrop structure will take into account, you know, decentralization and validator choice. So that feature, I mean, you know, like that, the decentralization is really important to us, and it's really something that guides a lot of the decisions that we make about the product and the design of the protocol, essentially.
And you know, talking about decentralization, how important is decentralization in the DeFi world? Because most of the crypto world is using CX, and decentralization, it doesn't seem to be valued much by the market.
Yeah. It's very important. Like, how actually decentralized is decentralized finance without decentralization, right? But you're absolutely right. A lot of users use centralized exchanges, for example, and for good reason, actually. Like the when you look at it, the user interface is neat. There are, you know, FAQs all over the place. They have customer service. The user journey is pretty straightforward. I mean, like, as much as I'm rooting for decentralization, like, honestly, from a user perspective, I get the appeal of using centralized exchanges. Like, it's funny because just the other day, I found out that my sister is, like, she keeps all her tokens on Coinbase. So, like, I almost choked to death, but then I remembered that, you know, a few months ago, like, I showed her how to buy coins on an exchange, but I never actually explained the importance of, like, having her own ledger. So, you know, that's partly on me as well. And you know, the past year has brought, you know, such cool products on Cosmos that are very user-friendly and just so smooth, like Cosmosis and Stargaze and Crescent. I can't shout all of the products out, but you know, when we see all these products, we really tend to forget, like, how painful the navigation can be for users on some protocols, especially a few years ago. So, like, I totally get the appeal of, you know, one-stop shops where you can buy tokens, you can directly stake them, and so on and so forth, and where you can easily navigate even when you've only discovered crypto 2 days ago. So, you know, I think that, and obviously this is just my personal opinion, because I'm also fairly new to the space, I think that, you know, like, not catering to the needs of users that are not necessarily crypto native or crypto friendly or tech friendly, like that can potentially be another form of gatekeeping, right? And so, yeah, I guess like the bottom line is, I guess we need to build DeFi protocols that are more user centric. But you know, the good news is we're seeing more and more of those, especially on Cosmos. So, you know, I'm really hopeful for the future.
And, you know, do you think that decentralization and the mass adoption, they both can coexist? And what would it take to bring them together?
Yeah, that's also a great question. I mean, personally, like I'm an optimist. I really think they can coexist 100%. But again, like we will need to unlearn a lot of stuff that we've been learning so far, right? Because you know when like you meant, like we talked about the example of centralized exchanges before, like relatively on the scale of time, just you know, on average and broadly speaking, centralized exchanges have been around for longer than decentralized exchanges. So like just that in itself kind of gives them gives an advantage, right? But again, as you know, as builders and generally speaking, just as people working in the crypto space full time, it is something that we need to be intentional about it, and we need to be building products that you know don't hinder decentralization first of all, and also you know products that are more, you know, user-centric. Like that's super important, and that's also something that kind of, I mean, it's not really missing from the ecosystem, but it's something that, you know, we can think of that that way, especially from the user perspective. Like the products that we are building today, they need to, you know, not impact decentralization in any negative way, but they need to also appeal to larger audiences. Like, don't get me wrong, like, of course, most of what's being built right now is really cool, but when you think about it, like, the core audience is people that are already familiar with crypto, people that are already familiar with Web3, you know what I mean? So, you know, this is like, yeah, right? And like, yeah. I really don't know about you, Sonia, but I always like hear a lot of people around me hate on NFTs and, you know, diss NFTs. And I'm just like, why? Like, why are we doing that? Like, you know, NFTs today are kind of like, think what you want about them from a product and from a utility perspective, but they are kind of doing a lot in terms of advancing, you know, crypto adoption and making crypto in the center of the mainstream conversation in a positive way. Like, for example, like most questions that I get from people outside of crypto, I still know a bunch of those weirdly. Like those people, they like most questions they ask me are about NFTs. And you know, if it's something that will get people to get interested in the industry, then great. You know, NFTs, it looks like it's been doing that for a lot of people, and from my perspective, that can be, you know, great contributors for the mass adoption of crypto. Like, why not? So yeah, I mean, I guess bottom line, we really need to build more user-centric stuff, and really invest in consumer marketing and educational content and a nice user experience, you know, that sort of things. Right,
and I get these questions regularly, and I somehow feel like there is lack of education about how the NFTs and everything work.
yeah
So I mean,
absolutely, and we should really invest more into that. I mean, for example, I know that that's a concern for us at Quiksilver, for example, in the way that we do, you know, marketing and content creation. And like I'm having this conversation all the time with Valeria, and it's always great to have her outlook on things. But essentially, the way we approach it is that you know, each piece of content that goes out, it needs to be as standalone as possible, you know. And people should be able to, you know, just read that tweet or that thread of tweets or that article, be able to read it and like kind of at least understand 80% of what's going on. Because otherwise that's also kind of a sort of gatekeeping, you know what I mean? If you need, you know, almost a master's degree to understand an article, then, you know, it's hard to keep going. Like it's easy to, you know, just throw in the towel. And yeah, so, you know, educational content is super important. And of course, user experience. I know that I've been allocating like a lot of time working on that in the past few weeks. And it's really something that is super important to us at Quiksilver. And we're really trying to, you know, build a really nice and neat customer journey on the platform. So. Yeah.
And as a DevRel, my job is also around the same area to educate people. And it's sometimes hard to communicate, but, you know, we are also sort of still trying to make it more accessible. And that's why one of the reason the Cosmos Ladies, this was an initiative that we started out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all we can do is try, you know. Like try, do our best, and we might not see the results, you know, right away, but I'm really hoping that, you know, in the long run, it will make a difference. Mm-hmm. But for sure, yeah, like we need to focus on that and also try to, you know, also make the jargon understandable. I always love, like, you know, sometimes you bump into threads on Twitter where, like, you know, for like 19 tweets the person just unpacks all the jargons, and I think that's really cool.
Right. And also, you know, apart from the education, what other areas or the aspects that you feel are missing from the Web3 ecosystem?
That's a hard question, because like I'm only speaking from my perspective here, and I know that like this is something that you know it has been missing a lot, and it has made like personally my ramp up kind of steep, and I reckon it has been the same for other people as well. On the topic of, you know, education within the space, I think we also lack a sense of community in the sense of, like, you know, mentorship, you know, again, being intentional about transmitting knowledge to other people, to people that are new in the space. I know that, for example, Preeti Kazireddy, she has been doing these boot camps and these you know, educational sessions on Ethereum that are really great for developers and that have, you know, helped a lot of developers get a foot in the space. I know that, you know, a few years ago when I had just joined the space, like, her newsletter helped me a lot in understanding a lot of, you know, the basic stuff. I think we really need to focus on that. But the good thing is that, you know, more and more I've been seeing a lot of cool initiatives like this, which is, you know, which really makes me happy. And overall, I'm really quite hopeful about the future of the ecosystem.
Like I have been in the Cosmos ecosystem from past 1 year, and it has changed a lot. A lot have been evolved, and I'm definitely positive about that. Since we are coming closer to the time, I would like to take some questions from the audience.
Sure. And just full disclosure, like I didn't see the time. So like I have another meeting starting in a few minutes. So like all I have is 5 minutes. Is that all right?
Sure. That would be enough.
Cool. Thank you.
Maybe Spurti, can you add? Maybe Nils.
In any case, like we are present. I mean, me personally, and also the rest of the team, and Quicksilver, we are present on like most of the main, you know, social media platform. You can reach us quite easily. We have a Discord, we have a Telegram group, we are all on Twitter. So, you know, if you guys think of something later on, the DMs are open, the groups are open, feel free to shoot them.
Sure. Actually, till anyone asks, why don't we, have one more question? What would be your main advice for the other female entrepreneurs in the Web3 ecosystem?
I really don't know how insightful I can be, given that, you know, I've only been an entrepreneur for the past 6 months. But I guess, you know, believe that you are legitimate, and that your contributions matter, and that what you are doing is important. And like, try not to doubt that as much as possible. I mean, obviously, you know, a healthy dose of self-criticism is good, but try not to doubt that you have things to say and to contribute to. And I guess also the other thing, and this kind of ties up nicely into what we've been discussing earlier in the space, build a network and a community that, you know, that you trust and that has your back and that you can talk to. And most importantly, like, keep the door open for other minorities and other women to be able to, you know, come to the space, onboard easily, and be in a safe environment. Just, you know, be kind. And my DMs are open. If you want us to connect, I'd really love that.
I love your idea. And, Spurti told me about you. And today when I have heard you live, I am totally a fangirl.
Oh, that's sweet. I'm really happy to have connected with you guys. I think with you ladies, you know, and I really think that what you are doing is really cool. And I'm looking forward to, you know, any more areas in which we can collaborate and help each other out.
Definitely. We will definitely reach out to you, you know, for more future collaborations. And I won't take much of your time since your meeting is approaching. So, a huge shout out to Roya for joining us today. And we totally appreciate it. Also, if you have anything that you would like to share or tell, please do let us know.
Thank you so much, Sonia. Thank you, Spurti. Thank you guys so much for having me. It's been really great catching up with you today. I guess one last thing, and Valeria is going to love me so much for this. Follow us on Twitter, join our Telegram group. I know we are always interacting with the community, and we love hearing from you guys. We love your questions. We love your feedback. We love having, you know, high quality discussions with you. This is all what Quicksilver is about. And really looking forward to more catch-ups, and perhaps we'll all connect soon in Cosmoverse in real life.
Definitely. I'll share all the handles on my tweet. And yeah, best of luck, Roya. Thank you so much once again.
Cheers. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was the Quicksilver chat with the Cosmos ladies about decentralization, diversity, and more. Recorded on Friday, May 20th, 2022. forterraspaces.org. I'm Finn. Thanks for listening.
They say rapping is the gateway, bringing home great pay. Checking that replay, sing along and we say nobody gives a fuck around my way. I make about $3 for every 1,000 plays, so add it up and do the math on that. Financially speaking, why the fuck would anybody wanna rap? But in this reality, the money comes from doing shows. But then where's the money go when you can't do the shows? I guess you could rap on Cameo. I've been asking all my friends if I can rap on the patio. 6 feet, motherfucker, step the fuck back. Doing a little magic, pulling rabbits out the rucksack. Not everybody's always in it for the money. Looking like another crooked Sunday and I'm working Monday. So you know I ain't stressing, left debating great methods. Amazed to play Inception, the bass stay blessed.
See, even with these huge sums of overall royalties, these sums of money that go to the record label per playback can seem insultingly small. Many rights holders are making around three quarters of a cent to listen to one of their tracks, leaving only some portion of that for the actual artist. They're making pennies per play. Until they can figure out how to turn a profit, their future will always be in question. But for now, investors see enough potential to continue to fund pennies per play.
Another day, another lesson. Living in the eighth dimension might be worth a little mention. Living in the Great Depression, got a real regal feel. Reeling in another sucker fish out to make a deal, just to make a motherfucker wish. Aw shit, now you only got two left. You know what I wish? We didn't have any loose ends. You know what I miss? Listening to excuses. Now we're on the fence like we forgot how to choose. That's what happens when people don't know what's true. In the dark, eating bullshit up like a mushroom. In the lunchroom, just trying to laugh it off. Meanwhile, foaming at the mouth like a rabid dog. Like a fake mating call at the zoo. It's looking like the view is getting disappointed too. I'm working on the new shit, trying to produce it. It's what I'm willing to go through when I'm making my music.